The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning to you from a sunnier Johannesburg than what we had yesterday.
Boker Tov, good morning to you from a somewhat wintry Israel, somewhat overcast and cool, certainly wintry weather. We've been watching water levels rise a little over the last week or two. This is now really supposed to be the business season for our rainfall and for the water. There are reports that the Kinneret, the main source of Israel's water, the Sea of Galilee, has risen just a little bit. It's now slightly under 2 meters away from its maximal level, at which point the so-called sluice gates at the Degania Dam could be open to allow water to run down the Jordan River, an event that hasn't taken place since 1992. And we were expecting it to happen towards the end of last year, but unfortunately the rainy season became somewhat dry. This year the rainy season has also started off very, very slowly indeed. Not a great deal of rain. Just in the last week or two, a little bit more, some snow on the Hermon that will help the situation substantially, but really not enough rainfall yet in terms of our business season to make us feel comfortable that we can go into the next year with the amount of water that we need. And just before we continue, a quick update regarding the opening of skies in Israel. Yesterday it was announced that most countries are now taken off the red list. Just a small group of 15 or 16 countries still left on the red list as far as Israel is concerned. Unfortunately, South Africa remains one of them. My expectation is that even those last few countries will be removed in the relatively near future. There is a clear direction now, a clear indication of where things are moving. So my expectation that the last few countries, which include South Africa, the UK, Canada, the United States, so some fairly important and substantial destinations, will also be removed from that red list in the near future, allowing freer flow. I don't say free flow, but freer flow of people traveling between the two countries.
Sure. I would have hoped that that storm would have brought in some much needed water. But of course, one can't rely on one storm. It has to be a consistent. We've been having consistent rain in South Africa. And for the first time in a long time, some of our dams are at over 100%. We actually have flood warnings in Johannesburg in certain low-lying areas or areas closer to the rivers. But Israel, of course, is way ahead in the world in terms of technology for water saving, water generation. And we can only hope that your Galilee levels rise in anticipation of the beginning of the business season. But moving on, Syria media has claimed that Israel carried out an overnight attack on Latakia commercial port. What information is there available? Did this alleged attack actually take place?
Well, we can't say for sure, but the reports that we get from Syrian media seem to be quite accurate from what we can gather. The IDF and the Israeli government, generally speaking, does not respond to these allegations, but it seems to be the case from reading between the lines that the Syrian media reports do at least report attacks when they take place. I'm not always sure about how they report these attacks because, for example, the main headline is that the country's air defenses managed to thwart an Israeli air strike on the port of Latakia. They then go on to talk about the fire that ensued at the port, the damage that was caused to property. So it seems as if those air defenses that thwarted this attack didn't quite thwart it in the way that they're reporting it, because clearly there were strikes. And from the Syrian media reports, it seems as if this attack was carried out this time from the Mediterranean Sea, the port of Latakia, of course, on the coastline, on the Mediterranean coastline in northwestern Syria. And it seems as if, though, if we believe what the Syrian media is reporting, that the attack was carried out from ships in the sea towards this particular port. It apparently targeted the container yard at the port, which sparked large fires and caused quite a lot of damage, according to other reports that we have read about this particular attack. And in fact, there was a video that reported that came from the scene. At least we understand that it came from the scene, which showed quite large explosions, could be seen from a fair distance away. And apparently, some hospitals and nearby, a number of other buildings nearby, shops were also damaged as a result of this airstrike. So the question is, why Latakia, and what is the significance, potential significance, of the strike on that particular location? And the kicker is that, of course, that area is exactly where the Russian forces in Syria are based. They have an air base not far away from Latakia. And in fact, this is not the first time that attacks have been carried out against that particular area. There were 14 Russian soldiers that were killed when a Russian military aircraft was downed. That was a situation that actually a Syrian air defense missile managed to down a Russian military aircraft. Apparently, the air defense missile was fired against incoming Israeli rockets. It missed those rockets and instead managed to strike a Russian airplane in which 14 Russians were killed. Those airstrikes also were based around Latakia, at least the strikes that the Syrian air defense was trying to thwart at that stage were also around the Latakia area. And also there was a Syrian soldier that was killed 2 weeks ago in an alleged airstrike, alleged Israeli airstrike at least, and this time in southern Syria. This particular attack against Latakia is the second time this month that that port is being attacked. And if we believe all the reports that we read in the Syrian media, and is the third attack in total this month being carried out against targets in Syria. So we've spoken so frequently about Israel being active against ports, against locations, against targets in Syria. What is the reason for it? Well, again, the concern about the Iranian buildup, concern about the movement of arms and ammunition that could potentially go either to southern Syria or potentially to Hezbollah in Lebanon, the concern about the buildup of technology, drones and technology of that sort that could potentially be a threat against Israel. Our intelligence are really onto these things. And of course, at every opportunity, we try somehow to cut down these supply routes in order that in future, Israel might not need to have to front up against some of these arms and ammunition and technology in the event that hostilities do break out between the two countries. So that's what we know at the moment. I guess there won't be a great deal more to be published unless someone actually makes an official statement, which I think is highly unlikely.
So what's of interest in another story that's come to light is that the Lebanon has created controversy by issuing a tender for drilling in maritime waters that are in dispute between the Lebanon and Israel. So I have a two-part question for you. Number one, where are these disputed waters? Why are they disputed? And number two, why is Lebanon taking this step now? And a part of that question would be, what do you think they're actually drilling for?
Well, I think the last question is probably the easiest one to answer. We know that there's been a massive economy of drilling for oil and gas in the Mediterranean Sea just recently. Israel has certainly taken advantage of that. Also Cyprus on their side in their maritime waters. And of course, Lebanon is very, very eager indeed to try and get in on this particular party because, of course, quite substantial supplies of gas have been found, particularly gas, but also some oil, but mostly gas, are found underneath the Mediterranean Sea. This is just a quite a recent discovery, and it has the potential to change the supply of natural gas to Europe, a market that's currently dominated by Russia, with pipelines that stretch across from Russia to mainland Europe in supply of natural gas. So it's clear what Lebanon is trying to do by issuing this tender for drilling in the Mediterranean in order to try and crash in on the party that is the wonderful economic boost of natural gas within maritime waters. The dispute of these maritime waters is for an area of water that runs right along the border, the maritime border between Israel and Lebanon. This is not a new problem. This is something that has come to the attention of the international community. The United States has been attempting to mediate between two countries that have no diplomatic relations with each other, that will not even conduct direct conversations with each other for fear of somehow recognizing the other country. So there have been these talks going on with the mediation of the United States. And in fact, we were on the verge of reaching a decision and an agreement between disputing parties on this issue when all of a sudden Lebanon sharply increased its demands about its claims to certain areas of maritime waters. It the original disputed area was 869 square kilometers. I'm sorry, not thousand, but 869 square kilometers. And then they suddenly increased their demand to 2,300 square kilometers, some of which would include the Karish North natural gas field, which is in Israel's economic waters and is already being drilled for natural gas by Israel. So those talks then went into some sort of hiatus, and there was no date set for the resumption of the talks. And this is now all kind of the talks are not continuing. No progress seems to be made or seems to be having been made in the recent time on resolving this particular dispute, and Lebanon has decided to take unilateral action now to issue a tender for drilling exactly within this area of 869 square kilometers, which has been disputed, and potentially even beyond that, in order to somehow try and gain some advantage from the natural gas in the same way that Israel and Cyprus have been doing, and which has been a real economic boost to both of those countries. Israel has written to the United Nations to ask them to get involved in at least stopping somehow, helping to stop Lebanon from developing and drilling in these waters which are under dispute. The UN ambassador, the Israeli UN ambassador, Gilad Erdan, has written a letter to the Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, to ask him to put a stop to this and to exercise international law, which would be in Israel's favor. And so this is all very, very controversial indeed. And I think that Lebanon is doing it simply because they are tired of waiting for their opportunity to cash in on what is quite a significant economic asset, which is in their hands. Obviously, they claim a little bit more. And the reason that they're claiming more is because of the gas that lies in that particular area. That would be the only reason why they wish to claim more. And of course, Israel is pushing back, saying, no, that gas is going to be ours and we're going to drill for it. And Israel is already very, very active in drilling in the area.
If they had to go ahead and the tender was issued and drilling started, this would be almost economic warfare. Could it lead to hostilities between the two countries?
I think quite easily. I mean, I don't know how far Israel would go in order to try to protect what it considers to be its own maritime waters, but I wouldn't put it past there being some open confrontation if some drilling company came along and tried to site a platform to exploit those waters. I wouldn't be one bit surprised if Israel took military action in order to stop that. I just wonder which drilling company in the world would be willing to accept a tender in waters which are clearly in dispute and potentially subject to military action. I'm not sure that drilling companies around the world would wish to get involved in that.
It would be a very costly mistake. Let's go back on 2021. Today we're looking at Israel's economy. Obviously, a lot of the world suffered during 2021. South Africa in particular had civil unrest, and the result of the pandemic just had a domino effect. Other countries fared fairly better. How did Israel fare during 2021?
Well, let's start with 2020, where, like most countries around the world, as a result of the pandemic, Israel had a retraction of its economy in 2020. That came as no surprise to anybody, and that was a very sudden development after the first quarter showed some sort of regular growth. of course, the remaining three quarters were not so good as a result of the economic shutdowns that were carried out. And there was an expectation that with the release of the shutdown restrictions, that economies around the world would grow. And there was an attempt to try to predict exactly how much that growth would be. In the case of Israel, once the restrictions were eased and it became clear that the economy was going to return to some semblance of normality, the expectation of the economic growth in 2021 was around the 5 to 6, maybe 4 to 5, maybe 6% mark for the year. And the economy, a recent announcement by the Bank of Israel has now set Israel's economic growth for 2021 at 7%, which far exceeds most economies around the world, even on the back of COVID shutdowns in 2020. Of course, the jump back was expected in most economies. And not only is the Bank of Israel forecasting 7% for this year, but when it rolls forward to 2022 in terms of expectations, it's looking at around 5.5% for 2022, which is quite phenomenal given where we were a year ago. But let's talk about some of the key indicators. Unemployment, for example, was a critical issue during the COVID pandemic shutdown period. Israel's unemployment is now around about 7%. So 7% of the economy are currently unemployed. And when one takes out those people who are not working because they have been laid off for COVID reasons, then the Bank of Israel is suggesting that the unemployment could be as low as 5 to 6%. So that's also a very pleasing development given the extent of the unemployment that we saw earlier in the year. There has been sign of inflation. There are inflationary indications around the world, but in Israel in particular, many of the prices going up. And so it is expected that inflation will rise. And of course, one of the key indicators, economic indicators, that will always be remembered for 2021 is the strength of the Israeli shekel, which is currently being traded at around 3.10 shekel to the US dollar. That's our key indicator point. It's one of the strongest shekels that we've seen over the last 20 to 30 years. And it continues to be strong in spite of the attempts by the Bank of Israel somehow to reduce the value of the shekel. Of course, a strong shekel is not always good for everybody. People who are trying to export goods and services from Israel are having to do so at a much more expensive price as a result of the strong currency. So it doesn't work well for everybody. And hence, the Bank of Israel trying to do everything that they can to reduce the value of the shekel. But overall, 2021 has been a relatively impressive year for the Israeli economy. Massive amounts of money poured into high tech, huge exits, listings of Israeli high-tech companies on stock exchanges around the world. It's been a very impressive and successful year under the circumstances.
Well, that's amazing news, and let's hope we see it continuing into 2022. And perhaps we as South Africans can take a leaf out of the economic textbook that Israel's been using, if it's not too late. Anthony Reich, as always, it's been a pleasure. I look forward to chatting to you again tomorrow and catching up on what's happening in Israel, as well as the look back on 2021.